basketball. He divided it into four and sent each one flying into a waterfall, where they sizzled out in the water. Then, all of the rocks that decorated the waterfalls began to shake until the rumbling filled the entire room. With a wave of Kate's hand, they stilled again, and it was silent.
"Earth," she said simply.
Calliope just nodded in response. "And I'm the ether," I said, stepping forward and taking Calliope's hands in mine. I gathered white energy, sending it out of my palms and into hers, the warmth of it buzzing through my veins. When I pulled my hands away, the scabs around her fingernails were gone, her skin now soft and smooth. "The central element," I explained, "otherwise known as spirit. I have the ability to heal."
"Wow."
Calliope examined her hands, awestruck.
"Thank you. Not even the best milk treatments have been able to do that."
Then she turned to Ethan, her face relatively calm given everything we'd just thrown at her.
"I would assume that you're air?" she asked him.
"Actually, no,"
he said, smiling sheepishly.
"I'm a son of Zeus. The elementals rescued me from the land of the Lotus Eaters. My sister and I were trapped there for 2.5 years. Well, it's a long story, but the guy who's air is resting right now. He needed to recharge after he flew our yacht over Charybdis."
Calliope opened her mouth, then closed it, and then opened it again.
"He flew a yacht over Charybdis?" she finally said. "Our guests are all allowed to portal in."
"Why take a portal when we can fly the yacht?" I waved away the feet as if it were no big deal. No need to bring her attention to the fact that we weren't approved guests. Once Scylla noticed, she got mad and tried to attack us. So we blinded one of her heads and blew up another one. That held her off long enough for us to pass through the strait. Anyway, we're on an important mission for the gods, and we need to talk to Lampetia. I leveled my gaze with Calliope's, hoping I looked intimidating and commanding.
"Now."
"Of course," she said, taking her phone out of her bag.
"I'll call her on her private line. Just give me a second."
She hurried toward the back room, her heels clacking against the tile. She only looked back at us once, and when she did, I swear, I saw fear in her eyes.
"Do you think it worked?" Kate asked after a few seconds.
"Well, she's calling someone,"
Danielle said, resting her hand on the hilt of her sword.
"If not Lampetia, then I'm guessing it's security."
"If she does call security, we'll fight them," I said, ready to grab my bow at a moment's notice. "Because we're not leaving this island without that milk." Chapter 37. Calliope came out 10 minutes later, looking markedly less frazzled than she had when she'd rushed out of the lobby.
"Lampetia will meet with you in 30 minutes, she said. "Cars aren't allowed on the island. The exhaust is terrible for the skin. So, like everyone who lives here, she travels by golf cart. She hopes you understand. In the meantime, you can wait in our deluxe overwater bungalow suite. I'll lead you there, so please, follow me."
She led us out of the lobby and onto an overwater dock that passed by the bungalows. The water around us was topaz blue, so bright that it hardly seemed real. The dock curved farther and farther out into the sea, until we reached the largest bungalow at the very end.
"Here we are," she said, opening the door and motioning for us to enter. "This is the nicest room we have to offer. A few celebrities have stayed here, although, of course, I can't name names." She winked, as if we should know who she was talking about. "Make yourselves at home. There's food and drinks in the fridge, and a plunge pool on the back deck. Lampetia should be here shortly. In the meantime, is there anything else I can get for you?"
"No," I said,
walking to the back and sliding open the door. The stunning view took my breath away. The crystalline sea appeared to go on forever. The sky was perfectly clear, and the towering green mountains looked like they'd come straight out of a fairy tale.
This is great. Thank you.
She just smiled in response, and then she left the bungalow, closing the door with a quiet click.
It's too bad Chris isn't here, Kate said. He would have loved this.
Why don't you take some pictures, I suggested. Then when we get back, you can show him what he missed. And that's how, despite the pressure of being here on a dangerous mission to save the world from wrathful gods, the group of us spent the next half hour taking silly photos together in the bungalow. After all, we were in one of the most luxurious resorts in the world. This bungalow probably cost more for one night than most apartments did for an entire month. It would be a crime to leave without photographic evidence that we were here. Although, we would never be able to show the photos to anyone, since our parents all thought we were on a school trip to Washington, D.C. I hated not being able to be honest with my family, but it was for their own safety. I had to remind myself of that to keep myself from feeling too guilty. Eventually, someone knocked on the door, and we put our phones away, sitting quietly on the sofas, as if we'd been waiting patiently this entire time. Come in, Danielle said, as cool and refined as ever. A woman walked inside, and she was so beautiful that we could do nothing but stare in awe. Her skin glowed with ethereal luminance. Her frost-blonde hair flowed down to her thighs, and her eyes gleamed as if they held the light of the sun within them. Her long white gown flowed and shimmered behind her as she walked, like she was a Grecian princess who'd stepped right out of the ancient times. She stopped in front of us, clasped her hands together, and met each one of our eyes. Her pleasant expression didn't falter for a second.
Hello,
she said, her voice light and musical.
I hear you've requested my presence, and that you have quite an interesting story to share with me.
Yes, I said, sitting straighter and taking the lead. Although, it's kind of a long story. We know you're super busy, and we don't want to take up too much of your time. So maybe we should get straight to it and tell you why we're here.
Don't be silly, she laughed, the most tinkling, lovely laugh I'd ever heard. Here on Thrinakia, we strive to bring happiness and serenity to every guest who stays with us. And what makes people happier than hearing an entertaining story? So please, tell me your story. I would so love to hear it.
Ethan got up from his armchair, tripping slightly as he stood. His gaze was so fixated on Lampetia that I supposed the location of the floor was the last thing on his mind.
Would you like to sit?
He offered, motioning to his chair.
Yes, she nodded, giving him an approving smile. Thank you.
She situated herself on the armchair, and Ethan headed to the dining room to bring over another seat. He placed it right next to Lampetia and sat down. He was transfixed by her. He hadn't seen anyone else in this room since she'd entered. Lampetia sat straight on the chair, as if she were a queen and it was her throne.
Now, she said, turning her focus back to me. You said it was a long story. So please, start at the beginning. I want to hear it all.
Chapter 38. Together, the four of us, me, Blake, Danielle, and Kate, told Lampetia about who we were and how we'd gotten there. We started from the beginning, the day I'd first arrived in Kinsley, and continued on from there. The sun had finished setting by the time we'd completed the story, the last hints of light sneaking their final peaks over the horizon. And now we're here on Thrinakia, so we can retrieve the second ingredient we need. The milk from Helios's immortal cattle, I concluded. We thought you might get angry at us if we tried to steal it, so we figured it was best to speak with you directly to see if you would be willing to help. She eyed me up for a few seconds, and I feared she might say no.
It was a risky move coming to me, she finally said, since, I'm sure you know, my father, Helios, is a Titan.
My stomach dropped, and I said nothing. I'd always assumed that Helios was a minor Olympian god. Why did no one mention that he was a Titan? I reached for my bow, ready for a fight. We might not stand much of a chance against a goddess, but we owed it to ourselves to try. After all, we weren't supposed to have a chance against Scylla, and we'd blown up one of her heads. Who knew the full extent of what we could do?
It's not risky at all, Kate said, although her voice shook slightly. Helios fought with the Olympians in both the Battle of the Titans and the Second Rebellion. And since you're here and not in Kerberos, you must have fought with him too.
Correct, Lampetia laughed, shaking her hair over her shoulders. I didn't mean to frighten you. It's just, things get rather dull around here sometimes, and your reactions to that were quite entertaining. Although, fierce daughter of Apollo, it would take more than an arrow to slay me. I dropped my hands into my lap. I would never do that, I said, although my voice faltered.
Yes, you would.
Lampetia's small, amused smile never left her lips.
And I would expect nothing less of you. But don't worry. Of course I'll help you. Or at least I'll try. I take it you want me to give you access to the immortal milk, do you not?
Yes, I said. We keep hearing about your milk spa treatments, so the immortal milk must be in the resort, right? Lampetia threw her head back and laughed, loud and musical, filling the entire room.
Silly girl, she said between breaths.
She finally managed to get a hold of herself, but her eyes still danced in amusement.
You don't want that milk. It's powdered garbage that we ship in from the mainland.
Danielle arched an eyebrow.
You're supposed to have the best milk treatments in the world, she said, pointing to the brochure on the coffee table. I read about it in there. Bathe in the sacred milk, and then have it massaged deep into your skin to unveil a fresh, youthful glow like the immortal gods themselves. Everyone who comes here expects the milk to be from Helios's cattle, but you're ripping them off?
It sounds so awful when you say it like that.
Lampetia flicked her hand in the air, as if tossing the thought away.
I'm not ripping them off. I'm simply making a smart business decision. Our spa treatments make us the prime destination for witches all over the world. If people knew that Helios's sacred cows refused to share their milk with anyone, no one would come here anymore. They would jet off to Tahiti or Bora Bora, or somewhere trendy like that. We had to do something to make us stand out. And what stands out more than an exclusive opportunity to bathe in the milk of Helios's immortal cows themselves?
Except the milk isn't really from the immortal cattle, I reminded her. It's powder from a bag.
Details, details, Lampetia said, laughing again. It takes so much milk to fill up a jacuzzi. Powdered milk is much more economical. Throw in a few bath bombs and no one knows the difference. The bath will still leave you feeling youthful and refreshed, which is what they want anyway. Who cares if the milk comes from a bag or from the udders of the sacred immortal cows?
Blake pressed the pads of his fingers together, watching Lampetia with suspicion.
Except that from what you told us, it would be impossible to get the milk from the cows at all, he said, since they refuse to share their milk with anyone.
Which is exactly why we have to resort to powdered milk.
She smiled and nodded at him, so enthusiastic that her hair bounced around her face.
I like this one, she said, pointing to Blake. He gets it.
Ethan pressed his lips together, his hands curled into fists.
I don't think Blake was trying to support your spa treatments, he said.
It sounds more like he's pointing out that you said you would help us get the milk from Helios's kettle.
But how are you going to do that when the cows refuse to be milked?
Since the gods sent you here for the milk, I figured they also told you how to go about getting it, she replied. But I'm more than happy to lead you to the cattle. It's truly perfect timing. My sister is in charge of caring for them throughout the day. She really is quite protective of them. And since the sun has set, by now she'll have brought them to the barn and retired to bed. You know how those farm girls are, early to bed, early to rise. So it'll be easy to lead you to the cattle without her asking what I'm doing. I'm the only other person on this island who has access to them, so you did the right thing in coming to me.
At least it's a start, Danielle muttered.
You do know how to milk the cows, Lampetia said. Do you not?
We were all silent, and she laughed again, as if we were children. Which, I supposed, given her immortal years, we were to her.
Have any of you ever milked a cow before?
She leaned forward, watching us in anticipation. Again, no one spoke up. Didn't you grow up on a farm? Danielle asked me. Yeah, I answered, crossing my arms. A peach tree farm? We didn't have cows, or any livestock for that matter. Well, sorry for asking. She rolled her eyes, holding her hands up in defense.
Why don't we just look it up on YouTube? Kate suggested, breaking the tension between Danielle and me. There are instructional videos out there for everything. That might help, Lampetia said. If the cows let you get close enough to milk them.
The tone of her voice made it obvious that she thought this would be hopeless, and I couldn't blame her. The cows were immortal, and in all those thousands of years, they'd never been milked. I wasn't sure how that was anatomically possible, but I supposed that biology didn't matter much while discussing sacred immortal cows. The gods wouldn't have sent us on this mission if it was impossible for us to complete, I said. Echoing what Hypatia and Darius always told us when we doubted ourselves. So let's watch the videos, and then try milking the cows.
Chapter 39. We all hopped into Lampetia's golf cart, and we were off to the ranch. Or at least, I'd assumed we were going to a ranch. Instead, we pulled up to an ornate gated driveway. Lampetia pressed a button on her phone, and the gate opened, leading us to a single-story mansion in the middle of acres upon acres of sprawling land. We pedaled along the driveway, which was lined with rows of shrubbery shaped like cattle. Driving down it was like proceeding down a red carpet, with cows watching us instead of people.
"Is this where you live?" I asked, as we pulled up to the house. "Don't be silly," Lampetia laughed. "I don't live with the livestock."
"So you mean, this is where the cows live?"
"Please don't refer to all the cattle as cows,"
Lampetia corrected me, stopping the golf cart at the end of the circular drive.
"It's offensive. Only the female cattle carrying milk are cows. Male cattle are bulls. Quite wild animals, the bulls are. They sleep in a separate wing from the cows, so they won't get too feisty. But yes," she said, flourishing her hand dramatically toward the mansion. "This is the barn."
"Wow," I mouthed, gaping at the building as I took it all in. With multiple marble columns in front of the entrance, it was hardly what I imagined when I thought of the word barn. Then again, I supposed the immortal livestock deserved only the best housing arrangements. We hopped out of the golf cart, each of us holding a pail provided to us by the resort. Hopefully, they would soon be filled with sacred immortal milk. Lampetia led us through the front doors, which were flanked with two golden statues of cattle. And we stepped inside the black and white tiled foyer.
It featured a bubbling fountain in the center and had busts of livestock displayed along the walls. Even the sofas were covered in cow-patterned fabric.
The cows live in the west wing, Lampetia said, pushing a button to open a huge set of double doors. This way.
We followed her down the hall, which had walls lined with wide doors, large enough to fit a cow. Above each door was a portrait of a cow, each one looking down on us as we passed by. There were golden plaques below each portrait, each with Greek writing on them.
The cows have their own bedrooms, Lampetia explained, stopping in front of a portrait for a cow named Melina. Melina is the calmest and kindest of our cows. If there's a chance of one of them allowing you to milk them, I would place my bet on Melina.
She smiled fondly up at the portrait of Melina, as if the cow could smile back at her. I suspected that Melina was her favorite cow of them all.
Follow me inside, and I'll introduce you.
Wonderful, Danielle said, although from the way she scrunched her nose, it was clear she was less than enthused. I guessed she wasn't an animal person.
Let's get this over with.
Lampetia pulled a key ring out of her pocket and opened the door, revealing a space the size of a large college dorm room. Inside, a huge black and white cow slept soundly on a plush, shaggy rug. Against the walls were matching golden troughs, one filled with water, the other filled with feed. There was even a crystal chandelier hanging from the ceiling. This was the nicest barn stall ever.
Melina,
Lampetia cooed her name, walking up to the cow and rubbing her hand over her head.
It's time to wake up. I have some people here I'd like you to meet.
The cow rolled over to upright herself, and she looked around at us, dazed. If the cow could talk, I would guess she would be asking why we were waking her up so soon after she'd gone to bed. She blinked a few times, then twitched her ears and let out a quiet moo, looking at Lampetia in question.
I know, you're tired,
Lampetia said gently, reaching out to stroke her nose.
But would you mind standing up to meet your guests? It's quite rude to meet your guests sitting down, you know.
The cow huffed, then she slowly stood up, mooing at us. I took a few cautious steps forward, but stopped in the center of the room, keeping a safe distance between the cow and myself. Does she understand you? I asked Lampetia, looking from her to the cow and back again.
Well, I can't exactly have an intellectual conversation with her, Lampetia said, an amused smile on her face. But yes, she understands the basics.
I hid the milk pail behind my legs. Apparently, this was one smart cow, and since she supposedly hated being milked, I didn't want to scare her when we were first meeting her.
You needn't worry about the pail, Lampetia said. Since the cows are never milked, they would have no idea what it's for.
So, what should we do? Kate asked. Should we just go up to her and milk her?
You may try, Lampetia said. But I can't promise that she'll cooperate. I'll actually be quite surprised if she does. But by all means, please try. If this works, I must be here to see it.
With that, she walked over to the only couch in the room and sat on it in full recline, as if preparing to enjoy a show. I half expected a fruit platter to appear in front of her so she could enjoy a bunch of grapes as she watched.
Well, Kate said,
holding her pail in front of her and watching the cow with determination.
I suppose I'll just try then.
I nodded and backed towards the wall. Blake stood next to me, so close that his pinky finger brushed against mine. My breathing slowed, and while I didn't look at where his hand touched mine, I didn't move mine away either. Kate crept toward the cow, and once it was apparent that the cow wasn't going to move away from her, she placed the pail beneath its udder. So far, Melina seemed unperturbed by us being there. Maybe Lampetia was right. and we would be able to milk these cows with no issues because we were sent on this mission by the gods.
The first thing I have to do is rub her udder so she relaxes and the milk drops down, Kate said as she kneeled onto the floor. She cracked her knuckles, took a deep breath, and said, "Here goes nothing." Then she reached forward, brushed her fingers against the udder, and the cow mooed and kicked her in the face, knocking her to the floor.
Ow!
She rolled over and cupped her hands over her face.
My nose!
Blood pooled in her hands, and I rushed forward to help. "Let me see it," I said, coaxing her hands away from her face. Her nose was bright red, and it was already puffing up, the bridge of it crooked. A few drops of blood dripped out and landed on the floor. "It looks broken," I said, "but I can fix it." Kate nodded for me to get on with it, so I touched her nose, called on the white energy, and healed it. Afterward, she pulled a tissue out of her bag and wiped the remaining blood off her face.
"Thanks," she told me, turning around to look back at the cow. "That hurt."
I don't think Melina liked that very much.
Lampetia laughed from her spot on the sofa, her eyes bright with amusement.
"Who wants to try next?"
"Do you have any ropes?" Danielle asked. "Something we can use to tie her down?"
"Don't be silly,"
Lampetia scoffed and stuck her nose in the air.
"We don't tie down the sacred cattle of Helios. How utterly demeaning."
"I'll give it a shot," Blake volunteered, looking over at Kate. "I just need to rub her udder."
"Yeah," she said, "but I want to try again. Maybe if I go up to her first and introduce myself, she'll be more comfortable with me. After all, I wouldn't want someone just coming up to me and touching me without a proper hello first."
I chuckled, since she did have a point. I wouldn't want someone doing that to me either. The only time I ever had was with Ethan, after I'd inhaled the scent of the lotus fruit. But that didn't count, since I was under the influence at the time.
"Be my guest."
Blake held his hands up and backed away, not looking too bummed about letting Kate try again. This time, Kate slowly stepped up to Melina's face and placed her hand gently on her nose.
"Hi," she said softly, stroking her fur. "I'm Kate. Your owner, Lampetia here, told me that you're the nicest cow in this entire bunch."
"Don't refer to me as her owner," Lampetia corrected her.
"The immortal cattle are sacred to Helios and cannot be owned. I am a guard for all of the immortal livestock."
Kate made a frustrated face, but when she turned to look at Lampetia, she was all smiles.
"Sorry,"
she said, turning back to the cow and continuing to stroke her nose.
"Your guard, Lampetia, has told us how sweet you are. Now, we really need some of your milk, so we can save the world from the Titans and their supporters. I promise I won't hurt you. Do you think you can relax for about 30 minutes and not kick me in the face again, so I can milk you?"
Melina let out a soft breath and nuzzled her nose into Kate's hand.
"I think that was a yes," I said. "I hope so," Kate said. "Let's find out."
She inched her way back around to Melina's udder and kneeled next to it.
"Here goes nothing," she said, reaching for one of the teats.
The moment her finger brushed against it, Melina bucked up, kicking over the pail and running to the other side of the room. She huffed and glared at Kate, her nostrils flared, her backside up against the corner.
"At least she didn't kick you in the face that time,"
Danielle said brightly.
"Progress."
"As if you could do any better," I asked. "Unless you have a secret way with animals that you haven't shared with us yet?"
"Nope."
Danielle leaned against the wall and held her hands out.
"I like to stay as far away from animals as possible. Thank you very much."
"Figured," I muttered.
"I warned you," Lampetia said. "The cows have refused to be milked. They get riled up whenever anyone tries. We've done everything in the books to calm them down. Music, massages, incense, putting blue energy in their water. But nothing ever works. We eventually gave up and let them live in peace.
But we need that milk.
Blake clenched his fists, his eyes fired with determination.
There must be some way for us to get it.
I wish I could help, Lampetia sighed and leaned back on the sofa, twirling her beaded necklace around her fingers. But unless you have some magical ability you haven't shared yet about how to get animals to relax, then it seems like all you're doing here is wasting your time.
Bring Melina to the land of the Lotus Eaters, Ethan said with a chuckle. That's a place where everyone knows how to relax.
She would let everyone there put their hands on a rudder in no time.
That's it. I snapped my fingers, smiling as the solution came to me. We might not be able to bring Melina to the land of the Lotus Eaters, but we collected more fruit than we needed to make sure we had enough. If we give Melina a bite, maybe she'll relax enough to let us milk her.
I'll go back to the boat and get the fruit,
Blake volunteered.
Let's see how fast I can get that golf cart to go.
That won't be necessary, Kate said. I have a piece of lotus fruit in my bag.
You what? I gasped, my eyes wide. Why are you carrying that around with you? It's supposed to stay locked in the safe of the yacht until we're ready to use it.
I know.
Kate shrugged and pressed her lips together, glancing down at the floor.
But I was careful with it. I made sure to double wrap it in plastic bags so none of us could smell it. And I brought a bottle of yellow energy water for us to share in case we needed to remove the fruit from the bags.
But why risk it in the first place?
Danielle asked.
You saw what that fruit did to us.
She shuddered, and I guessed she was thinking about those surfer twins we'd torn her away from on the beach.
Think about it.
Kate straightened her shoulders and looked at each of us.
We have no idea what we're going to face on this mission, and we know how much power that fruit has. I thought it could be useful, and if it helps calm Melina down enough so we can milk her, then I'll have been right.
I nodded, since when she said it that way, it was hard to disagree. It's worth a try, I admitted, looking at the others. What do you all think?
You already know that I'm in,
Blake said. I guess it's not a terrible idea,
but it's a bummer that we'll have to waste some of our fruit on this. We can't go back and get more, and we need it for the potion.
We need the seeds of the lotus fruit for the potion, Kate corrected her. Not the actual fruit. We can remove the seeds, feed the fruit to Melina, and still be able to use the seeds later. It's a win-win.
Then let's do it, Ethan said, as long as Lampetia approves.
With that, we all turned to Lampetia. She'd stopped twirling her necklace, and I held my breath as we waited for her to speak, afraid that she might not be on board with the plan.
Melina will not be hurt by this fruit, she asked. Correct?
Not at all, I assured her. The fruit will simply calm her down. Once it's out of her system, she'll be back to normal. Ethan was trapped on the land of the Lotus Eaters for over 2 years, living off nothing but the fruit. And he's fine now. Melina will be fine too, I promise. Lampetia studied me for a few seconds, and I tried not to fidget under her gaze.
If you promise, then I'll trust you, she decided. Give Melina this lotus fruit and see what you can do. If you're able to acquire her milk, then you'll be making history, and I'll be most impressed.
Thank you, I breathed, finally able to relax again.
Now, get to it, she said,
clapping her hands in a chop-chop fashion.
There's no time to waste.
Chapter 40. It didn't take long for us to drink the yellow energy water and extract the seeds from the lotus fruit. Now, we were ready to feed it to Melina.
Do you want to do it? Kate asked me, since this was your idea.
Sure. I smiled at Melina, whose big brown eyes watched me with a mix of curiosity and confusion.
I'll just hold it out to her, and she'll eat it?
Yes, Lampetia said. She'll eat it if she wants to. If she doesn't want to, you won't be able to force her. The same way you were unable to force her to allow you to milk her. And I won't have you shoving anything down her throat, she scowled.
How undignified.
All right. I inched closer to Melina, a piece of lotus fruit perched in my hand. It smelled deliciously sweet, and my mouth watered as the scent filled my head. But the energy water I drank kept me focused enough to know not to eat the fruit myself. Melina seemed to enjoy the scent as well, because she sniffed a few times, and her ears perked up. She walked over to me and nudged the fruit with her nose, gobbling it up in one bite. Once finished, she licked my hand until the juice was gone, and then she looked at me as if thirsty for more. But we'd left the rest of the fruit near the door so we could use it on the other cows if it worked.
I think she liked it, Lampetia observed.
I'm not surprised, I said. It's impossible to resist the lotus fruit. Melina's eyes glazed over. Clearly the fruit had taken effect. She started to lie down, but Ethan rushed over and wrapped his arms around her neck, his muscles tightening as he held her up.
No, you don't, he said sternly. You're going to stay standing so that we can get your milk.
Are you seriously holding that cow up by yourself? Danielle asked.
I'm strong, he said, winking at her. I'm a son of Zeus.
How typical, Lampetia laughed. Sons of Zeus are always so arrogant.
Can you blame us? He asked.
Our father is the king of the gods, after all.
As I said, Lampetia said, although she smiled at him. So arrogant.
Then she motioned for us to proceed, which reminded me that we didn't have endless time here. Is it okay if I try milking her? I asked Kate, reaching out to stroke Melina's nose again. The cow let out a long breath of what seemed like appreciation.
Go ahead, Kate said. Do you have any questions about what to do?
I think I've got it, I said. I watched the video too. I walked around to Melina's backside and sat down, positioning the pail under her udder. Like the video instructed, I nudged the udder a few times to make sure the milk had dropped. The cow didn't kick my face or buck back, which I took as a good sign. So I held onto the teat like the video said, by clamping it off with my index finger and thumb, and squeezed. I hadn't expected anything to happen, so I hadn't given much thought to aim. But out came a small squirt of milk, straight onto my face and hair.
It worked, I exclaimed, wiping the milk off my face. I did it!
Now try getting it in the pail, Danielle said. Although, who knows? Maybe the sacred immortal milk is a good conditioner. I didn't reply to her, instead continuing to squirt out the milk and making sure that it landed in the pail. The whole process was taking quite a bit of time, so eventually, Kate kneeled down next to me and milked one of the other teats so we could work together. It didn't take long for us to get a steady rhythm going.
This is kind of fun, she said, continuing to squirt one teat after the other. I don't know why Melina wouldn't let us milk her before. It doesn't seem to bother her at all.
Who knows? I asked. I'm just glad the lotus fruit worked. After about 15 minutes, the milk production slowed down until her udder was dry. Two of our pails were now full of milk. It wouldn't take long to do this to a few more cows, especially if we split up. Then we could take the milk and get out of there.
You guys?
Ethan said, still standing with his arms wrapped around Melina's neck.
I don't think Melina's doing too well.
I stood up, brushing my hands off on my jeans.
What do you mean? I asked, walking around to check on her.
But he didn't need to answer, because I saw it for myself. Melina's eyes were halfway closed, and her breathing was labored, as if each breath was painful for her to take. She continued like that for a few more seconds until she let out one long breath and collapsed to the ground.
My cow! Lampetia shrieked, shooting up from the sofa and rushing over to her.
She fell to Melina's side and tried to shake her awake, but the animal was unresponsive. She nudged her a few more times and then looked back up at me, her eyes wide.
What did you do to my cow?
She'll be okay, I assured her, joining her at Melina's side. I don't know what happened to her, but I can heal her. She'll be fine.
Yes, Lampetia said, her voice soft with desperation. Heal her, now.
But when I placed my hands on Melina's body, I couldn't sense her spirit. I searched harder for a pulse, for the light that was her soul, for something. But no matter how hard I strained, there was nothing. She was beyond my help. I pulled my hands off Melina's body and leaned back on my heels, blinking away tears at the sight of the fallen cow. I can't heal her. I shook my head hopelessly, unable to meet Lampetia's eyes. She's gone. I'm sorry.
Gone?
Lampetia snarled.
Do you mean to say that you slaughtered one of Helios's sacred cattle?
Blake stepped forward to stand next to me, resting his hand on my shoulder.
We didn't slaughter your cow, he said.
His other hand was wrapped around his lighter, as if he were worried that Lampetia might strike out at me at any second.
You were here the entire time. You saw everything we did. You approved of it all.
What I saw was that you milked Melina dry, she spat.
Her eyes narrowed into slits of anger.
And now I finally know why the cows refuse to let anyone milk them, because once they're milked, they die, just like poor Melina here.
I'm sorry, I told her again, my voice catching in my throat. I didn't know. If we'd known, we never would have taken all of her milk.
There's no point in apologies now, she said, standing up and crossing her arms over her chest. I'll have to tell my father about this.
You mean Helios? Kate asked, her eyes wide. You're going to tell Helios that one of his cows died?
Yes, Lampetia said. More precisely, I'm going to tell him that you and your band of cursed witches were the ones responsible.
But it wasn't our fault, Danielle said, her gaze level with Lampetia's. You were on our side. You helped us get the milk. Obviously, none of us knew that it would end up killing the cow. If you'd known, you wouldn't have let us do it.
But she's dead nonetheless, Lampetia sniffed. So I need to tell my father, now.
Just give us enough time to bring the milk to the boat and get off the island, I pleaded.
Please, we need this milk. Without it, we can't make the potion that we need to stop the Titans and their supporters from escaping Kerberos.
Blah, 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 Lampetia said, rolling her eyes.
You've already told me about the milk and your special potion, but you've forgotten one important detail. My father, Helios, is a Titan. Sure, he sided with the Olympians during the Second Rebellion, but who's to say he won't switch sides if the Titans come out ahead? And I've always been neutral in all of this war stuff. None of the gods care what I do. As long as they, and the demigods, and the witches, and any other magical creatures out there have a grand old time on my island resort. So you're going to need to leave that milk here. At least until I return from telling my father, so he can judge you as he pleases. I will leave it to him to determine what to do with you all. Kate's eyes widened in panic, and she didn't need to say anything to get the message across. Helios's decision wouldn't be in our favor. So I did the only thing I could think to do. I grabbed an arrow from my quiver, stabbed it through the remaining part of the lotus fruit, and threw it straight into Lampetia's shoulder. Her eyes went wide, and she stared at the arrow embedded into her skin. Her mouth dropped open in shock. I'd purposefully aimed for a non-fatal spot, since I didn't want to kill her. If it were even possible to kill an immortal goddess. I just wanted to get the lotus fruit in her system. Since she wasn't going to eat it voluntarily, shooting her with it was the best way to do that. She held my gaze for a few more seconds, but then her eyelids fluttered, and she gave me a loopy smile.
"Ow," she said, sitting down and pulling the arrow from her shoulder.
She held it up and laughed, as if it were the most amusing thing to happen all day.
"That hurt."
"Sorry." I walked over to her and plucked the keyring out of her pocket, twirling it around my finger. "But thanks for this." I flipped my hair over my shoulder and turned to the others, who were watching me with expressions of shock and awe. "Let's take the milk and get out of here," I told them, looking at the pails we'd filled. "We have to bring it to the boat as fast as possible."
"And what are you going to do with her?"
Danielle pointed to Lampetia, who was massaging the place where she'd been punctured with the arrow.
"Lock her in here with the dead cow?"
Sadness filled my heart as I looked at Melina's body. She was a sweet cow. If I'd known that taking all of her milk was going to kill her, I never would have done it. But it was too late now. We couldn't take back what we'd already done. All we could do was make sure the sacrifice hadn't been in vain. "Yes, we'll lock her in here," I said, marching toward the door. By the time she snaps back into focus and manages to escape, we'll be long gone from this island.
Chapter 41. Once back on the yacht, we secured the milk and told Hypatia, Chris, and Rachel the story of what had happened on the island.
"I warned you not to slaughter any of Helios's cattle," Hypatia reminded us.
"Once Lampetia tells her father about this, you all are going to be in serious trouble with him."
"What's he going to do?" I asked.
"I can't be sure," she said. "Back when Odysseus's men slaughtered the cattle, Helios told Zeus and the Olympians that if they didn't take their vengeance, he would shine the sun in Hades instead of on Earth. The gods couldn't have that, so to calm Helios, Zeus struck Odysseus's boat with a lightning bolt and destroyed it. Odysseus escaped by swimming to Calypso's island, and he remained there for 7 years.
"I think we can be pretty confident that Zeus won't destroy our ship," Rachel said. "Not with two of his children and one of his descendants on board. And with him being so vested in helping us on our mission?"
"I agree that Zeus wouldn't harm us," Hypatia said. "But what about the other gods? They can be unpredictable."
"The Olympians are on our side," Blake pointed out. "They're counting on us to reseal the portal to Kerberos to stop the Titans from returning to Earth. Helios can beg all he wants, but I can't imagine what would convince the Olympians to stop us from completing our mission."
"I can't either," I agreed. "But we'll still have to worry about Helios himself."
"Nicole's right," Hypatia said. "Helios might not be an Olympian, but he's still powerful. Once he finds out about what happened, this could be a huge problem for the group of you."
"But it's not our fault," Danielle said. "We didn't know that the stupid cow would die."
"The gods are really logical when it comes to their wrath," Hypatia said.
"Unfortunately, we have no way of predicting what Helios might do.
All we can do is focus on completing the final task of this journey."
Blake nodded, his jaw muscles tense.
"Which means it's time to discuss slaying the Hydra."
"Yes," Hypatia nodded. "Well, you've been out on the islands completing the first parts of the mission. I've been doing some research to find whatever I can to help you. And this is not going to be an easy task.
figured as much. I removed my bow and quiver and sat down at the table, clasping my hands in front of me. So, what's the plan? With that, the others joined us at the table, and we strategized for the rest of the night. Chapter 42. We discussed our plan for the next few hours, and since we needed to be rested for the task ahead, we eventually headed off to bed. But despite needing my rest, it was impossible to sleep. So I went upstairs to grab a snack, and found none other than Danielle there as well, apparently doing the same thing. "Hey," she said to me, taking a sip of her drink.
"You can't sleep either?"
"Nope," I shrugged. "I just wanted to grab a snack and take it outside. I thought some fresh air would be nice. I'll be out of your way in a minute."
"Can I join you?" she asked. "If you don't mind."
"Sure," I said immediately, the word getting stuck in my throat. Because why would Danielle want to have a snack with me? Neither of us had ever pretended that we were friends. In fact, in all the time I'd known her, Danielle and I had never once spent time together one-on-one. I didn't know what she wanted to talk with me about, but I doubted it would be good. We didn't talk much as we made sandwiches and took them up to the deck. The wind against my cheeks felt refreshing, and I sucked in a deep breath, loving the smell of salt in the air. It was too bad that this trip to Greece had been all business. I would have liked some time to enjoy my first trip abroad.
"So, what's going on with you and Blake?"
Danielle asked immediately after we sat down. My heart stopped at her question, and I looked down, studying my sandwich. There had to be a reason why she was asking. What did she know? I'd been trying so hard this past month to act like my feelings for Blake were nothing more than friendship. I thought I'd been convincing. "What do you mean?" I asked, figuring it was as safe of an answer as any.
"When we were on the land of the Lotus Eaters, seeing you kissing Ethan made Blake so angry that he was able to fight past the haze of the lotus fruit," she said. "I'd suspected there was something between you two, but that made me realize that I was right. You're the reason why Blake dumped me."
"No," I gasped and sat back. "I would never ask him to do that. We're not together, I promise."
"As much as I wish you were lying, I can't help but believe you," she sighed. "Things were ending between me and Blake before you even moved to town. You might not be the reason why he broke up with me, but you certainly helped move things along."
I pressed my lips together, not sure what to say. Because as much as I wished I could tell her otherwise, she was right. "Blake and I are just friends," I said, since it was the truth. But the words felt like knives in my throat as I spoke them. Because while they were true, I wished more than anything that they weren't.
"But you want more?"
She held my gaze as if daring me to claim otherwise.
"Don't you?"
"It doesn't matter," I shrugged, "because it's not going to happen."
"Why?"
she asked.
"And please don't say it's because you don't think he would be interested. I see the way he looks at you. He's interested, and we both know it."
I couldn't help but smile slightly at her observation, but I did my best to force the feeling away. Instead, I held my gaze with Danielle's and told her, "It's because I wouldn't do that to you."
"What do you mean?" she asked. "It's not like we're friends. You don't owe me anything."
"We might not be friends, but the five of us, me, you, Blake, Chris, and Kate, we're a team," I said. "So much rests on us being able to work together. If we fail," I trailed off, not wanting to think about what would happen if we failed. "We can't fail. I'll do everything in my power not to let that happen."
"So you're ignoring your feelings for Blake because you think that being with him would distract you from our mission?"
"No," I said, "not at all."
Actually, I thought if Blake and I were together, it might make us fight even better together. But there was no way I was telling that to Danielle.
Then why? She asked.
The truth, I asked, and she nodded. I took a deep breath. I had to tell her something. And while it couldn't be the entire truth, it had to be convincing, and still include some truth. It's because I didn't want to make you angry, I said, picking at the crust of my sandwich. How could I make you see me and Blake together every day and still expect you to want to work with us?
Back up, she said, dropping her sandwich onto her plate. You seriously think that I would be so upset over seeing you and Blake together that I would ditch out on helping to save the world?
Maybe, I shrugged. I don't know, but I didn't want to risk it. Then she did something that surprised me. She laughed.
I might be selfish, but I'm not that selfish, she said. I wouldn't leave the four of you to seal the portal of Kerberos alone, just because it hurts to see my ex-boyfriend with the new girl.
Oh, I said, since when she put it like that, it did sound extreme. But even so, I couldn't imagine how that wouldn't be distracting for you. We all need to be as focused as possible. One wrong move, and any of these monsters could kill us.
Danielle flicked her hair over her shoulder and smiled, as if completely unbothered by this all. My life, and the lives of everyone else on this planet, are more important than my hurt feelings about my ex-boyfriend, she said. Come on, give me some credit here.
Right. Heat rushed to my face, and I focused on removing the crust of my sandwich. But you don't mean... You don't want me and Blake to be together, I asked. Do you?
Of course not, she scoffed. But I think it's lame that you're keeping your distance from him because of me. After all, like both of us know, we're not friends. You should do what you want.
I would if I were you. I don't know, I said. I was actually thinking that it might be best if the five of us all agreed not to date anyone in the group. It would be easiest that way.
Come on, Danielle laughed. Have you seen the way Kate looks at Chris? She's crushing on him hard.
I shared a smile with her, since while Kate had never said so out loud, I'd gotten that impression from her too. Even if that's true, Kate's the most logical of us all, I pointed out. She wouldn't let her feelings for Chris distract her from our mission.
The heart wants what it wants, Danielle shrugged. You can't just tell us that we can't have feelings for anyone else in the group. We spend so much time together that it's bound to happen. If you try to keep people apart, you and Blake included, it's going to make the tension grow and grow until it gets so intense that it explodes. Better to let the waves roll as they may.
I think it's let the cards fall as they may, I said.
Whatever. She rolled her eyes. You get what I mean.
Yeah, I said. It's a good point. And believe it or not, I think I might agree with you.
Imagine that, she said. Maybe we have more in common than we thought.
Maybe, I said. And when our eyes met, we both laughed. Then we sat there in silence and ate our sandwiches, as if we'd been friends for years.
I should get to sleep, Danielle said once we were finished. You should too. We have a big day tomorrow.
This whole conversation wasn't some big confession in case we don't make it tomorrow, I asked, as we stood up and picked up our plates.
Was it? Of course not, she said. We're going to make it tomorrow. Don't doubt it for a second.
Good. I nodded, although my stomach twisted slightly, since neither of us could guarantee that was true. As much as I wanted all five of us, well, all seven of us, including Ethan and Rachel, to survive the fight against the Hydra, it might not happen that way. And it wasn't just tomorrow.
We wouldn't be safe until the portal to Kerberos was closed. What if the worst happened before then, and I never get a chance to tell Blake about my feelings for him? I shook the thought away, not allowing myself to think like that. Danielle was right. We would all make it tomorrow. We trained for this. We were ready. And Blake was sleeping right now. He needed that rest so he was at full strength to fight the Hydra tomorrow. I needed my rest too. But on the way back to my room, I paused in front of his door, contemplating what would happen if I knocked and woke him up and told him everything. I imagined how it would feel to kiss him again, to feel his arms around me and have him murmur in my ear that we had nothing to worry about and that he would keep me safe no matter what. I wrapped my arms around myself, pretending they were his, and smiled. If I went through with this now, I could tell him the truth about my power, too. It would be a relief to finally get the secret off my chest. But if I did this right now, I wouldn't only be waking up Blake. I would be waking up Chris and Ethan, too. Disturbing them would weaken the entire group tomorrow. And we had to beat the Hydra. I couldn't do anything that might risk lowering our chances of completing that final task. I moved my hand away from the door and shoved it into my pocket, forcing myself to step away. I couldn't be honest with Blake about my feelings for him until this mission was complete. So I went back to the room that I shared with the girls, crawled into bed, and despite my worries about what would happen tomorrow, eventually managed to drift asleep. Chapter 43. The stilling of the boat the next morning was all I needed to pull me out of sleep. I rubbed my eyes and peeked out the window, a sliver of sunlight shining on my face. "We're here?" Danielle mumbled, her voice groggy. She brought her covers over her face, hiding from the light. "Yes," I said, gazing out at the island in front of me. It was brown and dead, very different from all the other islands we'd encountered so far in Greece. I shuddered at the thought of the monster lurking somewhere out there. "I think so." We got out of bed, gathered our weapons, and met in the living room for breakfast. Chef hadn't made an appearance since losing his arm. He'd been hiding out in his room, refusing to talk to anyone. I tried to go in there once, but he wouldn't speak a word to me. All he did was stare at me, as if I were as evil as Typhon himself. So we were all helping out with making food ourselves. What we made had nothing on the delicious meals Chef had prepared for us, but the food was keeping us alive, which was all that mattered. "Are you all ready?" Hypatia asked after we'd finished eating breakfast. I looked around at the others, not saying a word. I didn't think I would ever feel ready for the task ahead. Slaying a Hydra wasn't something I think anyone ever felt ready for. It was something that you prepared for, tried your best, and hoped it was enough.
"We were born to do this," Rachel said, chugging down the rest of her coffee. "We've got it."
She leaned back and smiled, as if she truly believed it. I wished I could be as fearless as she was. Instead, my stomach swirled with anxiety, and I worried that if I ate any more, I would be sick.
"Are you okay?"
Blake asked me, his eyes flashing with concern.
"You're looking at your toast as if it's your sworn enemy."
I pushed the plate to the center of the table, unable to tolerate the sweet smell of the jam for a second longer. "I'm fine," I said, "just nervous about today." "I think we all are," Kate assured me. And at that, Rachel smirked.
"Except for Rachel, of course."
"You're really not nervous at all?" I asked Rachel.
"Nope," she said. "Remember, we're meant to do this. My brother and I are children of Zeus, and you and your friends have elemental powers, gifted from the gods. Hypatia's reminded us so many times that the Book of Shadows sent us on this mission. It wouldn't have sent us here if this wasn't something we could handle."
I nodded, turning over her words in my head. The book had sent us here.
as in the five of us, not Ethan and Rachel. But I didn't say it out loud, because what did it matter? Rachel and Ethan were determined to help us, and we weren't going to turn them down. We could use all the help we could get.
Do we need to go over any parts of the plan? Hypatia asked.
I shook my head no. We'd gone over the plan so many times last night that it had been drilled into my brain. Talking about it made my anxiety worse. I just wanted to go out there and get it over with. Luckily, the others shook their heads no as well. All right then, Hypatia said. She gave us each a small smile, although her eyes brimmed with sadness. I supposed she was worried to send us out there, but she didn't have a choice. This was what we'd come here to do. So she sat straighter, put on a brave face, and said,
Let's do this.
It was only a few miles walk to the swampland around what used to be Lake Lerna, but was now only a collection of springs. The swamplands were flat, brown, and mushy. I would have thought that nothing could survive here at all if it hadn't been for the pesky mosquitoes that I had to constantly swat off my skin.
Are we there yet?
Chris asked, reminding me of my younger sister Becca when we'd gone on road trips to the ocean when we were kids.
The Hydra lives in the spring of Arimony, Kate answered, in a cave, which should be right about...
She consulted her map and scanned the area.
There.
She pointed to a hill straight ahead.
So we hit around the lake, and we're there,
Ethan said, even though it wasn't technically a lake anymore, but a spring.
Shouldn't take long.
Around the lake? Danielle scoffed. Please, that's hardly the fastest route. She lifted her arms in the air, and the next thing I knew, the water in front of us parted like it did for Moses when he was leading the slaves out of Egypt. It crashed and roared, revealing the soggy sand underneath. It sort of reminded me of Charybdis. And right now, while she was controlling the water with a fierce expression on her face, Danielle looked every bit like a descendant of the gods. Kate stepped forward, digging her walking stick into the ground.
Is it wise to use your power like that? She asked Danielle. We could easily walk around the lake.
Which would take us much more time, Danielle said. Wouldn't you rather get this over with?
Danielle, Blake said, stepping in front of her and leveling his gaze with hers. It'll take us time to walk through the lake, too. You would have to keep using your power that entire time. What you're doing is impressive, yes, but your power will be much more useful when we're actually fighting the Hydra. Don't waste it now.
Fine. Danielle pouted and brought her hands down, and the parted waters crashed back together. A little bit of water splashed onto Blake, and I couldn't help but suspect that she'd done that on purpose. It took about an hour to walk around the lake. Once there, we stared up at the towering hill in silence. The hill looked so normal, with browned grass and a few trees growing on it. It was hard to imagine that an ancient monster lived inside. It was also crazy to think that thousands of years ago, Hercules had stood in this same spot, about to embark on a similar mission. We just had to follow in his footsteps. After all, he was the only known person who'd slayed a Hydra. So following his example made sense. And the first thing he was said to have done was lure the Hydra out of its lair by shooting flaming arrows into the entrance of the cave. Luckily for us, flaming arrows were my and Blake's specialty.
So this is it then? Rachel asked. This is where we'll be fighting the Hydra?
I looked around the potential fighting ground, the bare trees, the spring behind us, and the hill in front of us. Rachel's skepticism was understandable. The whole area was so quiet. It was hard to imagine that such a gruesome fight had happened here thousands of years ago, and that it would be happening again here soon.
Yep,
Kate nodded.
This is it. Or at least it should be, according to my map.
I'd already examined the map when we were going over the plans,
so I knew where we were supposed to be. It's right, I confirmed. Ever since developing my powers, I'd also been blessed with a natural sense of direction. It was one of the perks of being the central element of the compass. Blake moved to stand next to me, gazing at the hill, his eyes ready for battle. He reached for his lighter and flicked on the flame.
Are you ready?
He asked me. I looked up into his eyes, and the entire world felt like it stilled around me. Blake had been off limits to me for so long. It was hard to believe that if, when, we made it through this, all of that could change. I wanted to put my arms around him and confess my feelings to him right now. But I couldn't do it. Not now, not here, when we had a Hydra to slay. So I pushed the thought away. I would tell him afterward, once the mission was complete, like I'd decided last night. But everyone was waiting for me to say something, and I couldn't just stand there like a complete mute. So I drew an arrow from my quiver and strung it through my bow. Of course I'm ready, I said, steadying my stance and eyeing up the cave. My hands shook from the anxiety of what we were about to do, and I had to swallow down the fear that felt like it was about to burst right out of my skin. But I added, let's let the Hydra know that we're here to fight. Chapter 44. Blake lit my arrow on fire, and I sent it flying into the cave. Then I sent another, and another, and another, until all four burning arrows had disappeared into the darkness. But despite our efforts, the Hydra didn't emerge. I lowered my bow and turned to the group. They'd all gathered around me, their hands on their weapons, ready to fight. I can't use up all my arrows this way, I told them. If it doesn't work, we'll have to think of another way to get the Hydra out here.
Or maybe we don't need to get the Hydra out here, Blake said.
What are you talking about? Kate asked. We have to get the Hydra out here. That's what Hercules did when he slayed it the first time.
Maybe this Hydra learned from that one's mistake, he said, glancing at the cave. Maybe instead of getting the Hydra to come out here, we'll have to go to it.
Kate's eyes widened and she backed away from Blake, looking at him as if he'd lost his mind.
You mean you want to go inside the Hydra's cave? She asked.
He nodded, and her mouth dropped open in shock.
That's insane, she said. You can't be serious.
Why? Blake asked. What difference does it make if we slay the Hydra out here or in there?
It actually might be better if we slay the Hydra in the cave, I said, stepping to Blake's side. Then we won't have to waste more weapons or power trying to get it to come out here. We'll save more energy for the actual fight.
I just don't like it.
Kate wrapped her arms around herself, pressing her lips together as she studied the entrance to the cave.
Out here, I was planning on using the roots of the nearby trees to wrap around the Hydra's legs and secure it into place, kind of like what I did to the children in the land of the Lotus Eaters. If we go inside the cave, there won't be any trees nearby, so I won't be able to do that. The Hydra will have freedom of motion to go wherever it wants.
Rachel stepped forward, her hand on the hilt of her sword.
There are seven of us and one of it, she said. We'll storm its cave and slay it, just as we planned. We've got this.
Yeah, we do, Ethan said, giving her a high five.
Out of all the things we could do on our first week after escaping the land of the Lotus Eaters, this is by far the most epic.
I looked at the twins and rolled my eyes. Were all of Zeus's children this arrogant?
Besides,
Ethan added,
we don't have to worry about being killed. We have Nicole to heal us if we get injured.
I'll do what I can, I said. But you saw what happened to Chef.
It was a shame that Skilla ate his arm, Rachel said. But if the arm had just been chopped off and we still had it, you would have been able to reattach it, right?
I don't know, I told her. I've never tried to do that. Maybe it would work,
but maybe not.
How about everyone tries to keep their limbs intact?
Blake suggested.
Especially our hands, Kate added, since we need our hands to use our powers.
I shivered at the thought of losing a hand, or any limb at all. Good plan, I nodded, since I hated the thought of letting one of my friends down the same way that I'd let Chef down. It felt like a knife in the heart every time I thought about the pain and disappointment in his eyes when he realized that he would never have his arm again.
If anyone feels like the Hydra might overtake them, move away, I said. Like Rachel said,